Welcome to Manager Tools. When a direct says no repeatedly to feedback, part two. This cast answers these questions. Do directs have to accept feedback? What do I do if a direct says no to feedback? What if a direct says no to feedback repeatedly? What do I do then? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
With Christmas presents, it's best to go with the classics. An orange, a pair of socks, and a book. And Manager Tools is here to help you out. Mark has written two books, The Effective Manager, about being an effective manager, and The Effective Hiring Manager, about being an effective hiring manager, well-titled. What better way to say to a loved one, or even yourself, I want to help you be better, and here's how. Isn't that the true meaning of the holiday season? Find out how to purchase on our website, manager-tools.com/products.
Mark, last week we spent some time about directs and their ability to say no to feedback. And that shouldn't excite folks. It happens all the time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it happens all the time if you consider there are millions of managers in the world, yeah. Right? Yeah, the vast majority of times people say yes. And we just did a cast, I think, recently about when yes means no, where, you know, some people say yes because they assume you're joking, even though you stood up in front of them and said, look, I'm going to use this new technique, and because you're smart and you brief your people first, and you tell them it's okay to say no, it might be the wrong time or whatever. You know, you essentially say I'm being respectful and so on. And what's funny about this is that people assume it's not true, okay, when you say it's okay to say no. But then they complain that management doesn't give them more leeway, more freedom, and so on. It's like, you know, dude, it's like, I think I told the story last show about the, you know, the guy whose house is flooded, and he's given all kinds of chances to be saved, and he says no, because God will save me. And then at the end, God says, man, I sent a car and a boat and a plane to get you out of your house. What, you know, look, there are some people who are just predisposed to not respect the necessity of the vertical nature of organizations. You can decry it all you want, folks, but it's mankind's greatest achievement, and there needs to be some basic principles regarding role power and expertise power and relation power and so on.
Well, we've often said that one of the indicators of great relationship with your direct is that you can ask them for feedback and they are willing to say no. And the first time they say no,
it's a good thing.
It's a good sign.
Just in case anybody misheard Mike, he said you can ask them for feedback. He did not mean ask your directs for feedback on you. He meant ask them to accept feedback.
Yes.
And in the beginning, they won't. They'll say yes and maybe not mean it. Maybe they'll just be uncertain. But then at some point, they will realize that you're an honest person and respectful, and you do what you say you're going to do, and you mean what you say, and they will say, no, now's not a good time. And you will win a small part of their heart when you say, no worries, dude. Again, there's that. If you do what you say you're going to do, you'll be seen as trustworthy, and trust is the coin of the realm.
Let's jump back into, we were talking about then, you know, why do we recommend that you ask your directs if they're willing to take some feedback.
Yeah.
And one of the arguments I've heard, and I try not to laugh, but people say, like, I'm the boss, I shouldn't have to ask.
Yeah, which implies in it the very understanding about the vertical organization, when in fact there are plenty of behaviors among directs all the time that suggest that verticalness and role power are not in evidence. And so to just insist on that when there's ample evidence that it's not even though it's true, it may not be well understood or appreciated. I think it's always funny. I think I'm the boss and I shouldn't have to ask is a pretty inelegant defense of the idea that you should just be able to tell people what you think. Yeah. Look, you are the boss. And look, let's go a step further. You can, at any time, you can ignore us and you can give feedback anytime you want without asking, okay? But why? What's the purpose of talking to your people about their behavior, about their performance? Because behavior is performance. And the purpose is to encourage effective behavior in the future, either to change their behavior or to encourage more of the same for positive. That purpose works. Encourage effective behavior in the future works for both positive and negative feedback. Or as I like to tell people, there is no positive or negative feedback. It just works for feedback. And I said this in LA this week when I was down there presenting. I said, there is no positive and negative feedback. There are no positive and negative feedback. There is only feedback. Or put differently, there is only future feedback. That's all. You're giving feedback about what you want to have happen in the future. And we've said this a zillion times, that one of the fundamental thematic, strategic problems in feedback is managers think they're talking to their directs about the past. You're not. You're going to mention the past because what they did in the past is relevant, but what you're talking about is their future behavior. So if we're going to talk about performance, and if we're going to talk about behavior, and if we're going to talk about future behavior, the question we have to ask ourselves is, what's the most effective and efficient way to communicate about performance? And for 25 years studying manager behavior, almost any technique which addresses performance at the expense of trust is an ineffective approach. Now, I'm not going to get into a special case where there are people who work for you who are, for whatever reasons, incredibly professionally insecure, who simply cannot hear, cannot stand to hear anything that they've been told that's not good about what they do. There's a small group of people, and a lot of managers demur on giving feedback because they extrapolate from the 1 in 1,000 and say, I might have that problem, so I can't do that. Of course, that's an excuse for inaction all the time. There are those people like that, and I would suggest to you that they need some professional therapy. Don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting anybody's mentally ill. I'm using professional therapy, meaning therapy and lessons about professional life, that if But all you have to do to understand what is effective behavior as an individual is to say, okay, if 1,000 people in a company behave like that, if that was the population of a company, what would the company do? Well, a person who says, I won't take any feedback, that would then mean the entire organization would refuse to take feedback. So in other words, it wouldn't count its money. It wouldn't have any customer service because it wouldn't want to run the risk that somebody might say you weren't good. And look, guys, we've said this 100 times before, that organizations are organisms. Organisms are full of people, organic creatures, and the organism exists to serve other organisms. And if the outside world gives you feedback, you cannot have an inside world that doesn't. You simply can't maintain a stasis with your environment unless you behave in concert with your environment. Organizations exist to get feedback from the outside world. Therefore, managers must exist to give feedback in the inside world. And you are the agent. You are the actor as a manager. No, nobody else is.
You're just a synapse. That's all you are.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. We'll reduce it down to a few ganglia. So in other words, we respect that there are people who struggle with that, but it's your job to build up enough trust with them that they can hear it. And some of us have harder jobs than others. But you have to be careful. You can't just force it on people. And it's better to meet them a little bit in the middle. Because we don't want to destroy trust if we can avoid it. There are times when we can spend trust, but we don't want to destroy trust. Now, is it possible to have such high trust, trust that's indomitable, to name a famous British ship, that you can give feedback without asking? Sure it is. Absolutely. And some of us do it. But in our experience, that takes years of building up the trust and a relationship that's pretty much unshakable. Almost no managers are granted that luxury. And I will tell you, there are good reasons and bad reasons for it, but constantly reorganizing, constantly changing things, and good reasons are the world demands it, and bad reasons are because executives want to do it. But we move people around too much, or too many managers only have somebody for a year or 6 months, and it's harder. And that's one of the weaknesses of our guidance, we know. And to be clear, I mentioned that because we're not talking about your relationship with somebody who works for you for a year. It takes 5 and 10 years sometimes to have that level. There are exceptions. Some of you are particularly good at gaining others' trust because you have an aura of moral code about you. And to that, we tip our hats. But the question becomes, are we going to wait until we've achieved that level of trust, not having given any feedback, just so we can avoid asking? And that's just not, you start to violate your first principles of what is the manager's responsibility. And the manager's responsibility are results, and results, the very definition of results implies feedback. It implies doing something and finding out what happens because of what you do. That's what results are. So by the very definition of setting a goal, of setting a deadline, feedback is inherent in that. Okay, now look, I'm getting pretty esoteric here. Mike, I got to admit, I always listen to music before we start. And right before we started this morning, I listened to Ain't No Mountain High Enough with Diana Ross. And I'm sorry, you listen to music like that, you get in a good mood. You just do. I feel like Nate Pope.
Yeah, I just envision you in flowing white robes at the top of that mountain telling us about management.
Dude, you just took that totally in the wrong direction. Okay. All right. So a couple of more pieces about data on behaviors and management and giving feedback. Look, guys, 93% of the time when we've studied it, directs respond positively, effectively, to the first instance of negative feedback. So 93% of the time when managers use our model, the four-step model, and they ask first, and a direct says yes, 93% of the time, it takes one instance to get them to change their behavior. It only takes telling them one time you want something different next time for their next behavior to be effective.
And the great thing about that is in our model, it doesn't take a lot of time. It's one instance of it, and it takes an incredibly small amount of time.
It's 10 to 15 seconds. I mean, you're literally talking about these clerics who are arguing about how many angels can fit on the head of a pin. Well, no, in this situation, you see, I've got this and this and this. I mean, you know, I turned 60 this year, and I got to tell you, I got no patience for the manager goes, well, you know, we've got this and you don't understand this and this and this. You know, I want to say, you're 25. I've been a manager longer than you've been alive, and you literally don't know what you're talking about. And after talking to hundreds of thousands of managers in the last 30 years, I can tell you with pretty much numerical superiority and scientific certainty that you're hiding. You just don't want to do it. And you want to couch your defense in some, I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to waste my breath on you.
Right. Well, just think about it. I mean, let's say that you knew something that you could do twice a day. It took you 15 seconds and it added 20 years to your life. Like when you're 80, wouldn't you look back and go like, well, that was silly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so this takes 10 to 15 seconds, right? You just can't argue about that. Now, second, okay, the vast majority of directs who say no, okay, you say, hey, can I give you some feedback? And they say no, they trust you, and they figure, oh, he'll run right over me, and then you don't. First, A, they return within 3 hours. That's what our data show. We surveyed managers who were using our model. They returned within 3 hours to find out what the feedback was about, meaning they can't wait. And now they're asking you. And an even greater percentage admit to knowing what the feedback was going to be about, and in the event of negative feedback, understand what they're supposed to do in the future.
Wait a minute. I don't like that. I have to be able to tell them that they did something wrong. I can't.
Exactly. It's all about you. It's all about your anger.
I know they're going to change their behavior anyways, but man, I'm just not going to feel good about that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're going to get better results, but you're not going to feel good about it at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you get the result you want, but yeah.
Yeah.
If you've been thinking of registering for an upcoming virtual conference, now is the time to act. Starting January 1st, 2021, our virtual conference prices will be increasing by $100 per registration. Any and all conference registration purchases made before that date will not be subject to the price increase. Do you want to attend an event in June next year? Buy it today to pay the 2020 price. Get in on the deal by visiting manager-tools.com/training.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about why, and I think we understand now why the direct should be able to say no. But let's get to the meat of it. This is the thing that managers worry about. It almost never happens. Out of all the people listening to this podcast, and we have a lot of people listening, there'll be less than a handful that it will happen to in their entire life, but we got to cover it. Surely folks can't say no forever.
You got to stop calling me Shirley. Yeah. Well, they can't say no forever. Let's put it differently. They can. I mean, they're actually capable of doing it, but as my dad used to say, you can take more than you give until they run you out of town. So somebody can say no, and you say no enough to me, and I'll fire you. And don't get me wrong, guys. Just because I'm a high D and fairly cavalier at times, you know, I really like Napoleon's guidance to his officers. Risk, risk, always risk. But I will tell you, I don't take firing lightly. But I take lightly even less the idea that somebody thinks that they don't have to play by certain rules that exist within organizations.
Well, it's a core obligation.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Directs have a core obligation. This is not negotiable. This is not, there's not some new corporate model that exists that says, no, they don't have an obligation. They have a moral, professional obligation to hear feedback. And there is no rule that says they get to hear feedback the way they want. Okay, this is another thing. Well, I'm, you know, HR or some person on the internet who has never been somebody with P&L responsibility says, well, you know, if they're uncomfortable, we should sit down and we should talk them through it. Oh, sure. Sure. Every single person who wants a detailed description and a long chance to describe why they did what they did, every single manager, every single executive should sit down every single time somebody doesn't do something right and have a half-hour conversation. Yeah, that will destroy the company in a matter of months. Gosh, what that would do, that what that would immediately do, if people were logical, the managers would say, look, let's set trivial goals, because then there's no way they can miss them, and then I won't have to give the negative feedback, which takes me so long to give, and for them to argue with me about, that we couldn't get to the point where, you know, we're successful. The other side of the coin, we should probably tell people right here, if you're someone who believes that you and your manager are on the same footing, I'm not talking about as human souls, I'm not talking about as individuals, all of us are worthy of respect. But if you think that you're equivalent to your boss in all ways, and your boss has no specific authority over you, and that you deserve, you know, equal time, and you see democracy as a good form of organizational life, you don't have to listen to too many more of our podcasts. I mean, I'm just going to tell you, I would love an email from you when you say, yeah, you know what? You were right. And I'm not advocating this. Well, actually, I end up advocating for it. But that's like advocating that the sky is blue. You don't have to advocate for that. There's evidence. I mean, unless you live in London, maybe, where it's gray all the time. Don't get me wrong. That's not a ding on London. I love London. So look, directs do have a core obligation. So look, part of that allows us to be able to ask, right? That's, believe it or not, the fact that they have a core obligation means it helps that we ask, because they probably know, 99% of them know. So, but we ask, and directs can say no, but asking and being told no is not the same thing as saying that a direct isn't fundamentally required to hear, accept, and act on feedback. They are. It's part of everyone's job at everyone's organizations, even the CEOs, to accept feedback and to act on it. It doesn't matter whether you like your boss or not, guys. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you trust him or not, or her. Even if you're in a union, though unions stupidly make it hard for this very basic core operational principle to occur. Even if you're a government worker because you believe that nobody can get fired around here, your boss's feedback to you is part of your job. And look, the reason we're going on and on and on about this is knowing the reason why this is as it is will make you a better manager.
Yeah, and the fact that people, managers, are not taught this and don't know it is reasons why we struggle so much as managers,
right? Yeah, completely, I completely agree. We've said it before. Management is the start of your career where there's no handbook, no rule book, no training. Oh, but the stakes are way higher too. Maybe I'm the only one that doesn't know, and every other senior executive knows. Let's make it 10 times harder. Let's be very opaque about everything, and we'll start the succession planning process for CEO. Jeez. I mean, you know, okay, good on you. That seems penny wise and pound foolish to me, but there you go. Look, to get hired into almost any individual contributor role, you have to prove you can actually do the role. And no, look, that's assuming the interviewing process is reasonable. There will be some suppositions in there. But to get promoted to a manager role, process is fairly opaque. No guidance, no training, no communication that assists your transition. You know, at some point, Mike, I'm going to get a year's sabbatical and I'm going to go create a training course, which we almost already have, so that companies can license it and say, hey, every single manager goes through this week-long training.
Yeah. We've had clients tell us they need that.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, I'm old, so 30 years ago, some of this stuff existed, but it seems like they've just completely said, no, worry about it. You're on your own.
Yeah, and look, guys, the reason why, and if you do the math, if you do the logic, if you study organizations, you'll figure this out. The reason why we are all duty-bound, honor-bound, to accept and act upon feedback from our boss is because our organization accepts feedback from its environment. I said that a few minutes ago. I mean, it's not any harder than that. It probably doesn't seem simple to say it that way. But again, if you spent several hours thinking through the role of organizations, the nature of organizations in our society, feedback is inexorable. You cannot avoid it. And when you avoid it, you're actually getting it, but you don't know it, in the form of delayed punishment. Yeah. Right? Poor organizational performance leading to lack of promotion opportunities, lack of raises, lack of cool new stuff to work on.
Yeah, it is as simple as the human body gives feedback to the brain when you put your finger on a hot stove. If it were not to do so, if you didn't get that feedback, you would die. Right? And it's
yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that about the human body. I remember the first time I was studying the nervous system, and they taught something that I can't remember the words, and I'm sorry. There's two, maybe it's parasympathetic and sympathetic. No, it's wrong. Somebody's going to send me an email, and I tip my hat to you for educating me. Thank you. But if you're walking on the beach barefooted and you step on a rock, okay, you feel the rock and you lift your heel. But once I tell you this, you'll be amazed that it happens. The next time that happens, your heel doesn't come up in one lift. It comes up in two. There's a local in your heel where your heel feels something, but your brain does not. And then your brain feels it and lifts it the rest of the way up. And here's what I would say about human behavior in organizations. When somebody makes a mistake, they know they've made a mistake. They know they missed the deadline. They know they didn't put it together the right way. They know they don't have enough slides. They know they were late to a meeting. They know that they didn't answer the question their boss wanted them. They know they didn't return the phone call. They know it. That's the first form of feedback. But that's why managers exist, because if their behavior doesn't change, we are the second form of feedback. Now, we're not the brain of the organization. It doesn't need to go that far. This is just an analogy of two-step feedback. And that's one of the reasons why we have a podcast, which I think doesn't get a whole lot of credit. Not that we're in this for the credit, is called Grace Period. That when one of your directs makes a mistake the first time, you let it go. Okay. And then you look for the second time. Now, if they self-correct, in other words, if they stepped on a rock and then they put on shoes, okay, they did it themselves. They're attuned to their environment. They learned that they don't like feeling like they didn't do their duty. And so they do. But sometimes you see a second event, and so you mention it. Now, you only mention the second event. You don't mention the first one, okay? Because otherwise, they'll perceive you as holding it against them or waiting for a pattern. And that's how organizations work. Organizations are just human beings behaving. And this is why we like DISC. It's why we talk about behavior all the time. And it's nothing more complicated than that. It's a bunch of human beings acting in concert. And when I say acting, I mean behaving in concert. And look, as in most cases of managers wondering why things are the way they are, if you go through these exercises, that's one of them, you'll end up with the most effective behaviors. And if you start saying, no, I think I see a new way, and you suddenly have a 7 or 8 or 9 step process so that everybody feels good about it, trust me, dude, these are core processes. You can't have them last 7, 8, 9 steps. You can't go to a quiet place and have a calm conversation every time one of your directs makes a mistake. Well, actually, you can, but you'll be in an incredibly inefficient, ineffective organization. It goes back to what I said earlier. Our modern organizations are organisms. They're made up of people. They're not mechanizations. They're not machines. They're not made up of machines. Although I will say, I did get a note. I've said this before in the podcast, and somebody wrote and says, you know, I'm glad to hear you say that it's not machines, because we have to pass legislation, this is in the U.S., calling for a robot tax on companies that choose to robotify, I don't know if that's a word, but implement robotics in their physical plants, and that causes the loss of human employment. I laughed a little bit. I said, I almost wrote in my email back, you sound like a Luddite, because the entire history of routinizing, mechanizing, automating activities that can be done by machines has had enormous salutary effects on the human beings around them. And by the way, the human who loses their job because of robotics is much more a function of the leadership of the organization, not of robotics. But look, the organization, your organization itself, doesn't really exist other than as an idea to communicate the concerted efforts of the organic people in it. And one of the fundamental principles that binds organizations into a whole is the nature of role power. Okay, now I want you to hold on to that thought for a second. Role power binds, the idea of it binds the organization. Now look, no one would argue that your organization, I made this point earlier, that the organization itself is immune from feedback from the society it serves. By definition, right? An organization that attempts to be free of feedback from society, from its customers, the people it's supposed to serve, is going to die. Society asks from it different things over time as the world changes. And if it is not willing to adapt, isn't that interesting? Willing, that's a human word. Its lifeblood, revenue, will disappear. That's one of the reasons why academia and governmental organizations, sorry guys, you know me, I'm going to tell the truth even if it hurts, that those organizations struggle more to be great because they lack feedback. Actually, there is feedback. It's just not communicated in a way and acted upon. They don't respond to feedback. And when revenue disappears, the organization dies. And so one of the principles of organisms, I'm sure you've heard of it, is self-preservation. The organism, the organization that wishes to self-preserve must adapt. It must change. It must respond to society. I mean, So imagine then that the organism receives inputs to change, but its constituents, its employees, do not change. What happens to an organism that must change while all of its internal organs, its people, choose not to change? I mean, this is, it's like, I don't know, it's a simple mental exercise. The organism, which knows it needs to change, knows, and by that I mean it has, it is in receipt of feedback. And is it possible that senior leaders are getting these things and not talking about it? Yes, absolutely. And that's the case. It's a stupid-brained organization, and stupid-brained organizations or organisms die. And yes, if you're an individual contributor in that organization, you may find your future, your professional future, and your addiction, food, clothing, and shelter unhealthily attached to stupid-brained people. Yes, that happens. And that's why to be a leader is to feel the weight of the world on your shoulders. It's not, I mean, Mike and I, you know, we knew this already. We knew it and we'd lived it before, but, you know, charting the course of manager tools through pandemic 2020, you absolutely feel like I'm responsible for other people. If you're not comfortable with that statement, you know, you ought not to be a manager, or you ought not to try to be a manager. But the organism which knows it needs to change, but whose individual components do not change, the organism dies. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Well, actually, Mark, there's a situation where, you see, there's outside feedback that we need to change, but that may be true. But my manager is asking me to do something that I don't agree with, and I don't think that change is perfectly aligned with customers. Look, dude, tell your story walking, because the idea that you have a better feel for what customers are saying and therefore your boss's guidance is somehow not useful and you get to be the arbiter of what customers say is ludicrous, because again, we go back to role power. When society demands change, the organism that doesn't change dies. This is not even arguable. It's one of those good pronunciation words. It's inarguable that you have to change. But when you combine that immutable situation with the role power of the manager, whether you like role power or not, and you remember that role power is the ability to speak for the organization, the direct who, dismisses feedback from the manager speaking for the organization, the manager communicating the change from society, that direct who dismisses it or denies it, dooms the organization to death. And again, I go back to my analogy. All you have to do to determine whether or not that behavior is effective is multiply it by 1,000. Take an organization of 1,000 people where they say, no, I don't have to listen to you. Okay? If an organization desires to preserve itself, when society changes, when the game changes, when the chessboard changes, every employee has an obligation to change. And the way that change is communicated is from managers to directs. That is the nature of human organizations. It always has been, and it probably always will be. And so, checkmate. People are like, oh, no, you can't, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, I didn't invent any of this stuff. I didn't. And what's sad is there are people who are listening right now who've never heard that logic. Like, dude.
No, if you're going to be a manager, you got to understand that.
Yeah, after 25 years as a manager, you'll learn it, right? But you'll have this insight one day. You'll be reading a book or you'll be in a TED Talk. And you'll be like, oh, my, I just figured all that out. I wasted a lot of energy on arguing with that, not understanding it, not figuring out. It's like somebody rowing against the river. Why is it so hard? That guy over there, he seems to be going pretty fast. Well, he's going downriver, right? There are some forces you don't want to fight.
Yeah. So you figure out you got to get feedback, right? It's just the law of nature. You got to get feedback. And the only question is, how do you do it? And
well, wait. You know what, Mike? I got there is one situation where you would not have to.
Oh, okay.
You said gotta, so I just got to be clear. If society doesn't change, if everything stays in perfect harmony and stasis.
Well, okay, that's yeah. It's possible. Yes, it's. I'll grant you, it's possible. All right. Yeah. Okay. Well. Yeah. So you can just ignore what I said. When that happens, you just ignore what I said.
Yeah.
Right. And then, so you got, you know, then you figure out, well, how are you going to give feedback? You have to give it. And how are you going to give it? And you might go find somebody who has a model that's, it's, you know, provable, repeatable, teachable.
Yeah. So look, guys, every person in every organization is obligated to change at all times. And the way that change is communicated between managers and directs. And so directs are obligated to change when managers ask them to. This is immutable. It is as powerful as may the force be with you, or use the force, Luke, or make it so, whatever analogy you want. Now, look, you might say the direct disagrees with the manager. You know, the change the manager wants, a la the example I used a little bit ago, is different than the change the direct thinks the organization wants, or even that society wants, okay? This actually may be true. The direct may be right, but the organization cannot manage every individual's change. Organizations solve this problem by investing in their managers the right to speak for the organization. That means when a manager asks for a change, I know this is hard to hear, guys, but this is the math. You can't argue with it. When a manager asks his direct or her direct for a change, it is as if the CEO has asked for it directly because the CEO has granted that manager the right to speak for her. So organizations are built. I know that companies are greedy. It's just stupid. Organizations are built on principles of service to society. We agree to be bound together in order to do something we couldn't do individually to help other people live better lives. If we put something out there, a product, a service, an idea, and people don't value it, we will go out of business. Our ability to concertedly work together will be not useful, and we will stop and go find something else. So when society changes, if we're serving society, then we have to change, and the CEO can't direct every change. So managers' requests for change aren't negotiable. Look, take the other extreme. You tell a direct to change, and they don't change for 30 times. At what point are you going to say, look, I'm sorry. I mean, you know, unless HR swoops in and says, well, you know, this direct is a special case. Which, by the way, once there is one special case, everybody's a special case. But it's really, managers requesting change aren't negotiable. We can provide leeway. We can provide grace. We can be understanding. We can ask and cajole and encourage and wheedle and beg. But the underlying principles are not affected by all those individual behaviors. You may not like it. It may not be perfect. It may mean, guys, we understand what we're saying. It may mean that some ineffective managers ask for the wrong changes, and you may be working for him or her. But no organization can be successful with every one of its constituents being able to argue every case of change with their boss. It would lead to a legalistic, a sclerotic, a hardened organization, one that's destined to die. So, response to feedback from society is necessary for organizational health. That means the organization has to ask its constituents to change, and that responsibility falls to managers. And again, checkmate.
Okay, dude. We're at.
I went on and on and on again.
Yeah, it's okay.
We still got a couple more bullets. You know, okay, I'm going to take small solace. I know people are going to be mad. They don't like multi-parters. Why did it take God 6 days to create the heavens and earth? Well, because he didn't have an installed base. you know, I will take small solace in the fact that I started this cast knowing it was a long one, but not realizing it would be this long, thinking we've got to do the speech that everybody wants to hear at the top of the show, which we did. So I'm sure the high D's are no longer listening.
Yeah. Well, at the end of it, if you've heard it, then you can just skip it. So the part will be shorter for you. So anyways, I enjoyed it, dude. This is pretty fundamental stuff. And until you figure this out, your chances of being a really effective manager are pretty darn low. So I think it's worth spending the time on it.
I'm going to go listen to Diana Ross again.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks, partner.
That's it. We'll see you next week. Have a great one. So long.